to another edition of Warrior Connection. And respect is what every veteran and every military family is definitely going to get from Warrior Connection. Our purpose and our objective is to make sure you have the information you need, the documents you need. We can provide those for you and help you get your medical care that you need to understand the equipment that you need to go into war. The other thing, too, we're going to keep you totally informed of changes and events happening in Washington, D.C., that affect your health and safety and the medical care you get, the equipment you need, and everything else. Well, tonight, again, ladies and gentlemen, I can't even begin to describe it. Things continue to spiral out of control as far as trying to get medical care, medical research done, and everything else within Washington, D.C. And, again, joining us tonight, who's been a lot of times, and God bless her, is Denise Nichols. And Denise is a retired UFO Air Force major, a flight nurse, combat nurse, been around a long time, and her and I have been working together for very many years. And she also works all the time with the Washington, D.C. folks. Well, Denise, welcome, and what else can I say?
Doug, we're going to jump right into this because the RACS meeting on June the 17th and 18th was, as expected, things started happening over a year ago. Let me just give a quick background, and then I'll tell you what I choose to do to present all this so everybody can know what's going on.
And they need to understand, please tell them exactly what the RAC is and what that means.
Okay.
And who's involved.
That's what I'm going to do. Is the RAC was an effort worked by the Gulf War vets through the halls of Congress, senators and reps, and it was an act of law. Okay. It established the 12-member Research Advisory Committee established by Congress to advise the Secretary and also the Congress, since they created this, you know, we were involved in creating the bill that got this. And the group's charter of the Research Advisory Committee for the Gulf War Illness Research was established by Section 104 of Public Law 105-368, signed November 11, 1998. And it has provided advice, make recommendations on proposed research studies, research plans, and research strategies related to the health consequences of military service in the Southwest Asia Theater of Operation during the Persian Gulf War. They will not conduct research. Its charter instructs the committee to review all relevant research, investigations, and processes done in the past to assess methods, results, and implications for future research. They'll review proposed federal research plans, initiatives, and it goes on Gulf War-associated illnesses. The committee is established has Mr. Jim Benz, a Vietnam vet, former Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, and Chairman of the Board of Parallel Designs Incorporated of Tempe, Arizona. It was a medical company that was acquired by General Electric in December 2000. And, you know, through his guidance, a lot of things have come together. We have an advisory committee. There is also an expert panel that the advisory committee can consult with. And these people that are on the committee, besides the Gulf War vets, which there were three, involves people in research, experts who may or may not have been involved in the Gulf War illness research, but it includes epidemiology, biomedicine, neurology, occupational health toxicology, and vaccinology. Okay? And so we have a lot of different specialties as far as those that are sitting on committee. There is no termination date on the public law. It was agreed that they would, you know, two to three years and rotate as members had to, you know, these are giving additional time as government service. This is not their full-time job. They agreed to serve because of their deep feelings of what needed to be done and to develop a solution for veterans. And so we got started with the meetings in 2002. Now, we've had roadblocks all along for 22 years, Doug. And what has happened is that the VA, DOD, has blocked our pathway in so many ways. We're not going to go over that tonight. But this actually started coming to a head a year and a half ago. Some of the committee members had worked with VA officials and others to develop a strategic plan. And that is on the VA RAC Guffor Illness Research page. People can refer to that. I've got the links up on my Facebook page. It was a very in-depth plan. And what we wanted to do was, the endpoint is find treatment for Guffor vets. Okay? And essentially, the secretary decided on a new charter from whatever input he got. And we've had some people involved all along that has blocked our headway. And significant things were taken out of the charter. What I'd like to do, Doug, and it'd take a few minutes to do this, but I'd like to read the letter that the three Guffor veterans put together and sent to Secretary Shinseki on June 10th. All this started coming to a head a couple of weeks before the June 17th RAC meeting. It was the first RAC meeting in person for over a year. The last one was in Boston back in June. They had one telephone conference. They're trying to work up their report, their annual report, and they've been interfered with getting that process done. So without other further ado, this is a long letter, but I think it maps it out well. I want to give credit to the three Guffor veterans that have served on the committee, being our nurse that served on the RAC, the Presidential Advisory Committee, Marguerite Knox, Joel Graves out of Seattle, Washington, and Anthony Hardy. The three of them directed a letter to the secretary, and I'm going to read it. Dear Secretary Shinseki, as all of the remaining Guffor veterans on the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Research Advisory Committee on Guffor Veterans Illness, we write to you with grave concern regarding recent changes to the RAC's charter, scope, composition, budget, and staffing. As you may know, since its belated creation in 2002, the RAC has championed research efforts aimed at improving the health and lives of the estimated 250,000 veterans of the 91 Guffor, more than 1 in 3 who have continued to suffer for more than 2 decades from chronic debilitating health effects of Guffor service, known as Guffor illness, without proven effective treatments. As ill Guffor veterans ourselves, we take deep and special interest in our fellow ill and other Guffor veterans. We do our best to hear their voices and needs and echo their concerns. We believe from the timing and scope of these sweeping changes that they are retaliation against Iraq and its members for being outspoken on Guffor health issues, part of the RAC's congressional mandate, and are an attack on Guffor veterans. Apparently, you have already signed these sweeping changes into effect. However, they must be swiftly reversed, and much more must be done to rectify VA's growing injustices against Guffor veterans. The recent history. First, allow us to share with you a bit of relevant history. In 2008, the RAC issued a comprehensive review of available scientific evidence related to Guffor veterans' chronic multi-symptom illness. The RAC concluded that the evidence was sufficient to show that Guffor illness exists, it's vast in scope and impact, that its health effects have endured over time, and that a number of potential causes can be inferred, while others can be ruled out, including stress and psychological or psychiatric conditions. As in the past, these RAC reports provided VA with a series of detailed recommendations, many of which remain unfulfilled. However, this report helped encourage ill Guffor veterans across the globe, with headlines reading, "Guffor illness is real," and news stories summarizing the most important findings. This and other RAC reports were made possible in large part by having a dedicated, although small, professional staff for the RAC, which could be eliminated under the changes you signed. In 2011, at the insistent urging of the RAC, VA finally began a process to create a comprehensive strategic plan for Gulf War illness research. Many members of the RAC and a mirage of VA and non-VA medical researchers and others participated in this extensive process, including some of us Gulf War vets on the RAC. After more than a year's work developing this consensus plan, at the last moment, VA staff came back with major changes to the final plan that were unacceptable to the entire RAC, including us Gulf War veterans. On June 19, 2012, the RAC's public, unanimously supported report concluded no confidence in the ability or demonstrated intention of VA staff to formulate and execute an effective VA Gulf War illness research program. VA has yet to fix the many serious issues identified in this report, including the whitewashing of this first ever strategic plan. On March 13, 2013, the House Veterans Affairs Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigation held a bipartisan hearing that included testimony by a VA researcher turned whistleblower and a Gulf War illness medical researcher, one of us Gulf War veterans, and VA staff. The hearing blew the lid off a long list of serious issues hidden inside VA and negatively affecting countless Gulf War and other veterans' service suffering from serious post-deployment health issues. However, instead of any visible resolution by VA to the many serious issues raised in these and other reports and testimony, instead we see only retribution actions that appear aimed at silencing the RAC and Gulf War veterans' legitimate interests. What's wrong with the new charter? First, the new charter you signed and again, which must be swiftly reversed, makes the following sweeping changes. All these changes, separately and even more so when combined, ignore the congressional intent for the RAC and have serious negative consequence for ill Gulf War veterans. Number one, Secretary Shinseki ends VA mission to improve Gulf War veterans' health. The following language is removed from that original RAC charter, and nothing in the 2013 charter replaces that language. And that language was, the guiding principle for the work of the committee shall be the premise that the fundamental goal of Gulf War health-related government research, either basic or applied, is to ultimately improve the health of ill Gulf War veterans, and that the choice and success of research efforts shall be judged accordingly. The committee shall assess the overall effectiveness of Gulf War research to answer central questions on the nature, causes, and treatments for health consequences of military service in the Southwest Theater of Operation during the 1990-91 Gulf War period. VA staff had apparently succeeded in getting you, Mr. Secretary, to sign a document ending VA's mission to improve the health and lives of ill Gulf War veterans. This is the ultimate standard by which all federal Gulf War medical research has been and must always continue to be judged. These changes put an end to that, defying Congress, harming Gulf War veterans. This curtailment is in clear contravention to the bipartisan 1990-98 legislation creating the RAC. One of its co-authors at the time said, I don't believe we've had a focused, coherent federal research strategy. This bill will give the Persian Gulf veterans confidence that priority is being given to researching their exposure and the resulting effect on their health so that effective treatment can be found and administered to fight the detrimental effects of this exposure on the veteran's health. The principal bill author went even further. I believe the American Legion has best described the significance of these provisions in this bill when they talk about it by saying, in quotes, "The best contribution that Congress can make in search for the cause and medical treatment of Gulf War illness." One can only imagine how the American Legion and other VSOs might react should they learn this core component of the legislation they fought hard to win on behalf of our nation's Gulf War veterans has been curtailed without justification or merit, let alone resolution. Yet in this new charter, your signature sweeps away the very root of what Gulf War veterans and our representation in the Veterans Service Organizations and Congress has firmly sought as our principal goal. Further, it should be noted that this editing from the previous charter to the news is similar to VA staff getting last year of the draft of the Gulf War Illness Research Strategic Plan, which after VA staff unilateral reductions has once again left VA's Gulf War research program unfocused and incoherent. It's also consistent with last year's annual report of the VA Office of Research and Development, which says VA's Gulf War research is aimed at showing whether there is a link between Gulf War service and Gulf War health issues. All of VA should know by now there is no whether. As science has repeatedly and thoroughly concluded, Gulf War illness is real and associated with deployment environmental exposures. Number two, Secretary Shinseki ends VA accountability and independent assessment of the effectiveness of federal Gulf War health research. Under the new charter, VA staff will now be directing the formerly independent RAC rather than the other way around, ending the RAC's independence. And under the changes, the RAC will no longer be able to assess Gulf War research effectiveness. Under the new charter, the RAC's role would be sharply restricted, limited to VA only. Until now, providing an independent expert assessment of the effectiveness of all federal Gulf War research judged on a treatment standard has been the core mission of the RAC. This mission is fully in keeping with the language and intent of the 1998 law creating the RAC as an independent oversight board, providing advice and expertise to be heeded regarding all federal government Gulf War research efforts. How do we know the congressional intent of the 1998 law creating the RAC? Because we Gulf War vets were involved in the landmark 1998 legislation that created the RAC. One of us was closely involved in the law's drafting, passage, enactment, and the fight for implementation after years of VA staff-led foot-dragging. Two of us helped write the original RAC charter based on those laws and that history. All of us have extensive histories of service to our fellow Gulf War veterans. According to a public statement by two of the congressional authors of the 98 law, part of the intent in creating the RAC was strengthening the process by which the government sets its Gulf War research agenda and ensuring that the federal government is accountable for its research agenda. Your signature puts an end to that, defying Congress and harming Gulf War veterans. Number three, Secretary Shinseki enacts sweeping changes to the RAC's budget and structure that will negatively impact its continued effectiveness. Under the new charter, the VA secretary no longer determines the RAC's budget and staff. These functions are now given to VA staff, some of which have been a problem against which Congress, VA leadership, the RAC, and Gulf War veterans have worked together to redirect. The budget for the committee is newly capped not to exceed $400,000. The requirement that the RAC have its own dedicated independent staff that report to the RAC is eliminated. The requirement that the RAC even have its own staff is eliminated. The RAC could be forced to reduce its meetings to just once annually, as VA staff have forced the RAC to do in the past year, instead of traditionally three meetings each year. All these separately and combined curtail the RAC's independent scope and ability to carry out its mission. What's wrong with the VA Chief of Staff's letter about RAC's changes? There's a number of equally serious issues in a May 16th letter attached from the interim VA Chief of Staff to RAC Chairman Jim Benz. The letter delineates a number of additional changes to the RAC. VA unceremoniously fires RAC leadership and at least half of its members. In this letter, RAC Chairman Jim Benz, Gulf War Veterans Principled, Fair, Just, Nonpartisan, Long-Standing Champion, is unceremoniously fired with a transition period. This firing is beyond the pale. Chairman Benz has single-handedly done more for our 250,000 ill and debilitated Gulf War veterans than every VA secretary in the past two decades combined. Half the RAC membership is removed this year, though they've not yet been notified. The other half would be removed as early as next year. The letter states that new expectations will be relayed to new RAC members through those are not made clear. Rotation of public advisory committee membership is clearly acceptable. Summary firings and retaliation are not. VA downplays rather than addresses well-found concerns. The letter denies that there's anything to worry about with regards to VA's handling of its internal investigation of Dr. Stephen Cohen's serious whistleblower allegations regarding VA research wrongdoing. To date, there's been no public VA statement regarding the doctor's allegations, which are fully consistent with the experience of RAC members and Gulf War veterans. Given the longstanding history of VA mishandling of Gulf War illness, Agent Orange, atomic deaths, burn pit exposures, chemical warfare experimentation, and similar issues, there is little reason why VA should be expected to be trusted to do the right thing. Number six, VA chastises Iraq for maintaining its congressionally directed watchdog stance over federal Gulf War research issues, instead of fixing the many things wrong at VA that have been constructively raised by the RAC but continue to be ignored by VA staff and leadership. It should again be noted that Congress created the RAC with the explicit explanation that it would provide independent, constructively critical oversight over a broken federal Gulf War research effort. Seven. VA states an intention to make RAC like all other VA advisory committees. Again, in clear contradiction to and contempt of the 98 legislation creating this body as an independent body providing advisory oversight over all federal government Gulf War research with the aim of improving ill Gulf War veterans' health and lives. Eight, VA's new RAC charter has already been signed without apparent consultation or input from Iraq leadership or members or Congress or the VSOs. A little history here. When in the 1990s, Gulf War veterans came forward with all too real health problems, VA and DOD's public messaging discounted our serious health issues as merely stress. When Gulf War veterans testified in good faith regarding known chemical incidents and other exposures potentially associated with their symptoms, VA and DOD picked away at each of them, asserting none could possibly be the cause but not offering any other answers in return. Today, some of the same personnel are at VA and DOD and continue to downplay rather than work to solve the health issues of burn pits and other serious post-deployment health issues. When Gulf War veterans sought effective Gulf War treatment, VA instead pushed placebos, mental health counseling, and symptom-by-symptom Band-Aids. When Gulf War veterans sought medical help from VA medical specialists, VA created environmental coordinators who focused on risk downplaying communication and healthcare cost reduction rather than helping unravel Guffor illness's complexities. As one example, the VA environmental coordinator told Guffor veterans advocates, "There's nothing wrong with you Guffor veterans. You just need to forget about it. Get on with your lives and get past it." Today, like so many other examples of VA staff gone bad that should have been permanently removed long ago, she and some like her within VA are still making Guffor and other veterans' lives worse, including providing disbelieving evaluations that damage or destroy veterans' legitimate compensation and pension claims. When Guffor veterans succeeded in gaining congressional earmark funding for unparalleled Guffor treatment-focused research by Dr. Robert Haley, University of Texas Southwestern Research Team, VA staff succeeded in killing the funding and research and replaced it with nothing. While Guffor veterans experience serious and debilitating symptoms, VA staff have created epidemiological surveys that ignored or skirted around asking about these issues. When the RAC has tried to help fix these, VA staff has helped destroy those efforts and sent out seriously flawed surveys whose results will screw VA's future research efforts for years to come. When Guffor veterans pushed for and actively participated in a good faith effort to create a comprehensive strategic plan to solve Guffor illness, VA staff at the end unilaterally gutted the plan, including removing all mention of Guffor illness even from the report's title. The end result was back to the same old, unfocused, investigator-driven, anything-goes approach that has resulted in zero proven effective treatment in over two decades of VA effort that has continued on the path of mistaking motion for progress. When Guffor veterans have served as consumer reviewers within the Congressionally Illness Directed Medical Research Program funded by Congress with clear treatment focus and a special part of the Department of Defense, we have seen and reviewed hundreds of comprehensive research proposals from among the best research institutions and researchers in the country with clear and specific plans as how Guffor illness treatment can and will be elucidated. Many of these excellent proposals could and should be funded by VA, but are not, to the great detriment of ill Guffor veterans. On October 28, 2002, then-VA Secretary Anthony Principi, Deputy Secretary, had this to say about the RAC: "This august group is among the vanguard in turning around the stinging words of a 1997 report issued by the House of Representatives Government Oversight and Committee, which said, when it comes down to diagnosis, treatment, and research for Guffor veterans, we find the federal government too often has a tin-ear, cold heart, and a closed mind. Clearly, the past decade has not covered VA in glory. However, since taking office last year, this administration under Secretary Principi's leadership has begun to change that. Perhaps deserved congressional perception. If Secretary Principi implementation of and support for the RAC were among the VA's brightest moments for Guffor veterans, the virtual destruction of the RAC in this new charter, which you signed and which must be reversed, is arguably the worst. The way forward." Mr. Secretary, in a growing chorus over the last several years, we've heard medical researchers present to the RAC and elsewhere that there are unique and defining features to most Guffor veterans' chronic multi-symptom illness and that effective treatments likely can be found. Yet that core principle, the primary goal of all federal Guffor research, must be to improve the health and lives of Guffor veterans suffering from Guffor illness, is unacceptably eliminated from this new charter you signed. When Gulf War veterans, medical researchers, and even a former VA researcher turned whistleblower have provided congressional testimony with specific instances of VA gone wrong, excuse me, let me catch my breath here, and specific recommendations to fix those wrongs, VA, including under your watch, has all but ignored them, dismissing what has been said as political rather than substantive, constructively critical, and pointing a clear path to how VA can and must do better. Your absence at all these hearings has been duly noted. And when Gulf War veterans succeed in seeing the congressional creation of an independent research oversight board, VA staff now seek to destroy it with your signature and apparent acquiescence, Mr. Secretary. In the more than 22 years since the 1991 Gulf War, VA has rarely treated our Gulf War veterans appropriately without specific congressional mandate. For more than two decades, Gulf War veterans have had to fight against entrenched government bureaucrats and an unfilling bureaucracy. Mr. Secretary, of course you cannot be held responsible for the wrongs of our Gulf War veterans endured prior to when you took office in January 2009. However, we have nearly always had VA secretaries stand by our side in the fight against the forces within and without VA that have failed our Gulf War veterans. Mr. Secretary, we have noted with deep disappointment that in 4.5 years in office, you have never once come to a single meeting of our Gulf War Research Advisory Board, even though you've made it a point to attend other advisory panels, and even though we generally meet right downstairs from your office. In the last few years, the most problematic VA staff has been allowed to run amok. Research and research efforts blocking those, gutting core principles and guiding documents related to Gulf War veterans' health, and lying to Congress and even your former VA chief of staff. But with your signature on this new damaging charter document, if it's allowed to stand, you'll be the first VA secretary in health in history to directly and definitively add to the decades of substantial harm occurred to the Gulf War veterans. You will be the secretary to remember for reversing VA's course and seeking to care for ill Gulf War veterans who bore the battle. Mr. Secretary, if you do indeed care about our Gulf War veterans, which we hope and believe you do, then much more needs to be done, and with your directed and personal involvement. As ill Gulf War veterans ourselves and representatives on the rack of our fellow Gulf War veterans, we call on you in the strongest possible terms to take immediate personal involvement in these issues, including restoring the original VA Gulf War Illness Research Strategic Plan, the RAC Charter, and the RAC Chair. We agreed to serve and continue to serve because we wanted to make a difference, and hopefully we can. It's been inspiring working with the brilliant, committed people who served on the RAC, where we've seen important, thoughtful recommendations develop. But who would agree to serve to public service if they thought they would work hard only to see all their efforts whitewashed, swept under the word, mischaracterized as political rather than constructive, and ultimately just ignored? One of us had stopped coming to RAC meetings due to feeling not heard. Another of us walked out of our last meeting because VA's deafness to the RAC's important recommendations became unbearable. All of us have discussed resigning in protest. Next week, we will be meeting with the RAC on behalf of our fellow debilitated and long-suffering Gulf War veterans in your VA headquarters building in Washington, D.C., again, just downstairs from your office. Please take this opportunity to demonstrate that you care about Gulf War veterans. Come and address our public meeting. Publicly echo and specifically pledge to solve the concerns we have raised in congressional testimony, public comment submissions, RAC reports in this letter, feel free to sit down with us privately. We'll be happy to discuss what can be done and must be done. Root out, remove, and replace the staff who've been problematic long before you arrived at VA and will be problematic long after you've gone, if you don't do it. Reverse the slash and burning of the RAC. Restore the RAC charter. Remove your signature and ownership from this reversal of Gulf War veterans process and begin to work directly and personally to fix the growing list of wrongs that Gulf War veterans continue to endure for more than two decades following our 1991 Gulf War service. We intend to provide courtesy copies of this letter to relevant congressional committees and our own congressional representatives for any assistance they may be able to provide respectfully and with the utmost sincerity. Anthony Hardy, Marguerite Knox, Joe Graves.
These are incredible individuals that I do know personally. And I'm going to come back to this because the letter you've written is staggering.
Let me mention one other thing. A couple of things. The chairman wrote specifically to the chief of staff, and we have all these documents. I'm going to summarize what he said in issues. One, the RAC's not the problem. Two, the problem is staff hardliners push back to reverse the progress, seeking to reestablish scientifically discredited policies from the 1990s, including the fiction that the illness is or may be psychiatric. Three, Congress created the RAC precisely to provide the kind of independent advice because of the demonstrated inability of VA and DOD staff to face this problem honestly and conduct an effective research program to solve it. Number four, the report concluded, report he's referring to is, after 19 months of investigation, the subcommittee finds the status of efforts on Gulf War issues by the Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense, CIA, and Food and Drug Administration to be flawed. That was the original, committee that led to the development of the RAC. The individuals behind the recent staff pushback are some of the same people that Congress was concerned about in 1999, who built their committees on minimizing the health consequences of toxic exposure, and he names the names. Number six, the worst of the old policies resurfaced by staff in early 2012 was the manipulation of Institute of Medicine Gulf War studies because it misdirects the entire scientific community. I'm just reading the top lines of his points. At a congressional hearing in March, a former VA senior epidemiologist testified that Dr. Peterson identified the speakers to invite, among other actions, to misguide research related to the health effects of toxic exposure, and that involves the IOM committees. Eight, the membership of treatment report committee itself was stacked with experts in psychosomatic illnesses. So, you know, those are the top eight things he mentioned. His letter was 3 pages long with attachments, but I think the most powerful thing I could read tonight and give you a whole synopsis of what's happened was our Gulf War veterans, the three individuals that served and wrote the letter to the secretary. What happened at the meeting was that the acting chief of staff opened the meeting. There was a session around after he spoke, around going to the committee members themselves. It was asked many times, how did we go outside the boundaries established? Give us examples. Tell us what we did wrong that you are doing this. He could not answer it. He's a retired general. Okay? And it got around to Marguerite Knox, who was the last one that asked him, tell us what we did wrong with examples. And Rehoff is his name, retired general, did not answer him. Then after the committee members had given their feedback or questions. We did public comment. There was a total, counting the three on the committee, we had a total of 10 Gulf War vets there and one wife. And each person stood up and talked to them, mentioned our concern with this direction. And then because it was very hard, we wanted to be there to hear our researchers' presentations that were there to present from Georgetown. But we felt it was very important. This had finally came to the war bell ringing to stand up and say, no more. This has got to change or else we've lost. So there was a walkout. And we went and saw people on the Hill, senators and representatives, to report to them what had occurred. So that's where we're at, and we're asking all individuals to write their senators and reps. We have this all scanned into documents. We want them not only to get the letter about the independent nature being corrupted, but also the source documents, of which I read one to you. They need these source documents so they don't have to waste time as senator staff or representative staff to go get these. We scanned them. We have them in a link. And we're asking for letters to be sent so that all 435 reps, all 100 senators, become aware. They have generated quite a few articles that have been published on the situation that started right before the meeting occurred and has continued afterwards.
Okay.
They're trying to get major media to cover this issue.
Mace?
Yes, I hand it to you.
Okay. What you've described to me, when you woke me up in the middle of the night to report this the other night, it's just mind-boggling again. We have discussed this on Warrior Connection ever since Warrior Connection began. Gary Knoll has done incredible documentaries on all of these problems that are available from Gary Knoll directly. And this is extremely important. If you haven't seen the documentaries created by Gary Knoll describing all this with total documentation, you need to obtain those and watch those. If you haven't seen the document we did on Warrior Connection with Joyce and the Power, you need to see this. But I want to come back, and I want to come back to it very clearly. And I explained this to you, Denise, when you and I first met. My God, now it's, 15 or 16 years ago now?
Long time. Probably longer than that time.
I don't know anymore. And for some odd reason, we were brought together. But as you've had the opportunity, and I want to repeat this, you have had the opportunity to meet all of us that were in theater, the members of Bowers Raiders, the members of the medical command staff. And we knew about all these health and environmental effects. We reported all of this. We tried to teach everybody. I mean, we actually had a course, medical management, chemical and biological chemistry course. We taught it to all the command staff. You know perfectly well, and this is in the formal military records, that the ground invasion was held up until we had the final teaching done to the command staff on chemical and biological, because we knew Iraq had it at that time because the U.S. Army gave it to them.
Right.
Now, it's also extremely important to understand that at the time of Desert Storm, and you go into the history books and everything, and they claim less than 1,000 casualties. Well, the majority of the casualties we did have, they were both wounded in action and killed in action, were friendly fire from the use of uranium munitions. Simple as that. This is a reality. And then we had accidents and everything else with the horrendous problems as a consequence of all the toxic exposures happening right off the bat. We attempted to teach this, and Colonels Dunn and Wade came from Fort Detrick and Aberdeen with the total intent of stopping all of this stuff. And as we do know, then, the Surgeon General at that time did everything he could to kill the information, to stop the information from going out. So we have a serious problem where the health effects of military operations during Desert Storm and the health effects of military operations now in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom and New Dawn have created millions of casualties in U.S. military alone, the sons and daughters of our nation. Deliberate and willful disregard. Because everything
again,
was done to stop it from the beginning.
This again demonstrates that we're at a huge roadblock, a huge one that will affect our research. And next week we have an IOM that the VA lined up to define multi-symptom illness. Now, the normal course of doing that was discussed at the RAC, and normally it's a group of experts that, like we have on the committee, and other experts that come together to convene a conference, and they together work this out.
You know,
it doesn't take 12 months. It doesn't take a more expensive venture to do a review of literature, and that's what's starting at the IOM. Now, I'm on one of the panels to discuss the symptoms, and we'll do the best job possible. But again, they are turning to a research review when our experts on the RAC said, no, that's not the way to do it.
Denise, hold on a minute. Would you stop for a moment, please?
Sure.
We have to understand, and this is for everybody to understand that's listening or may get this or come to the archives. A review of literature will not find anything, because when we attempted to provide the actual original reports from the theater medical findings from the command staff to the Institute of Medicine, Dr. Harold Sock said, we're not going to allow that because it's not been peer-reviewed. And we said, this is not peer-reviewed. This is the actual medical information from day one. The review of literature won't find anything because it's not been published there. Deliberate results have not been published. Effects have not been published. For example, Colonel John Gingrich, who was the chief of staff of the VA, as we know, just got fired, has claimed in his golf ball report on page 34 or something like that, that 79 individuals had always been provided care for medical care for DU exposure. They had over 400 individuals that whose medical care I personally ordered in March and April of 1991 that have never got it. Okay, that's just a primary staff. And we know from the GAO reports that he lied through his teeth. Well, now the Canadians, and again, I got the report in the mail from the VA guy, Great Care, up in Canada, again, claiming no health effects from DU, citing the fraudulent information about our health effects and medical care, which is thoroughly documented.
And we've got it from the Australians and what
Absolutely.
Happened.
Absolutely. So what, this
what happened, and this is critical to understand, DOD sent individuals to Canada, UK, and Australia, and whoever else they visited, and, you know, in their plan to, you know, rate this as stress psychological. And it seems like we're still battling that, despite having reports that it is not stress, besides having research that's showing it is not stress, it's physiological neurotoxin damage.
Well, you have to understand, this is far, and this is what people fail to understand. The U.S. Rep House and the Senate, both of them, you and I have gone up there, we've walked the hill, we've briefed a million of them. I don't know, it seemed like we've done testimony, we've given written testimony by direct request of the House Oversight Committee, and yet all of this stuff is ignored. And we have to understand it. It's not just the casualties of the U.S. military and the casualties and the spouses of the U.S. military that came back with cross-contamination that we've discussed on the show. It's thoroughly documented. We got the problem right here with spouses and that went over and got contaminated, got sick, came back, and then their spouses got sick. We know this is happening.
If we cannot solve these problems and get answers for the first group of vets, 90, 91, there is no hope to get answers on the health of the family, the birth defect or birth effects, okay, or for OIF, OEF. They will benefit from us being this lead group.
IOM has already reported in their January report, and again, this is all going to be posted on the archives for Warrior Connection and Gary Noll. I mean, Gary Noll, God bless Gary Noll for all the work he's done, confirming all of this. We know the health effects now are OIF, OEF, and the consequences of the medical diagnoses and the epidemiology all matches what got from Desert Storm. So it's all the same, but it's far greater, and this is one I want to make very, very clear. It is far greater than just the health effects on 1.5 million U.S. military or 2 million U.S. military that served in the Persian Gulf now since we went in there in the spring of 1990. I want to repeat, since we went in the spring of 1990, not August of 1990, spring of 1990, knowing perfectly well what the problems were because we were sent over there to make sure everybody came back alive. Right. Denise, you've seen all that documents.
Yeah.
You've had them access come back.
Doug, but we've been through this war many times.
It's been the health effects on the millions and millions of civilians, the non-combatants in these nations that we attacked and totally contaminated and destroyed, the civilians throughout the United States, to include Vieques, Puerto Rico, and all of the nightmare that the Hawaiians are experiencing right now, which will be the subject of next week's radio show on Warrior Connection, and it continues to grow on a daily basis.
Right. The malfeasance, the misconduct of DOD and VA against millions of Gulf War veterans now, if you count the OIF and OEF, is incomprehensible.
You know,
they have destroyed any trust or faith that we had in our government. We've tried to work with them. But, Doug, I want to take just a short breath here because we only have a few minutes left of the show. And I think we may have a call-in from Keith, who was there at the meeting.
Keith, are you with us?
I don't know if the engineer knows to let him in, but he was going to be online since he was there. He didn't call?
Okay.
But, Doug, you know, the important thing is we've hit another huge roadblock that has to be reversed to maintain the integrity, the trust, the independence that we have in Iraq.
Well, let's come down to another thing, and I want to make this extraordinarily clear, and this is posted on the Gary Knoll in the Archives for Warrior Connection 9. He's done this in his documentary. General Eric Shinseki, who was a one-star general, signed the order back in 1993, personally signed the order as a one-star general based on my direct input to the Surgeon General and everybody for maintaining, mandating medical care for all depleted uranium exposures, thorough training for everybody going over there, and thorough environmental remediation. As a consequence, as you know, I went on as the director of the Depleted Uranium Project and wrote the Army regulations, and we put the medical directors together mandating the operations. And then General Shinseki, as the chief of staff of the U.S. Army, has signed the Army regulations in the orders that they're totally disregarding and avoiding all liability. And this goes back, Denise, you have a copy of it. We've given it to the House and the Senate. We've given it to House Oversight. We've given it to the RAC and everything. The signed order called Los Alamos Memorandum, which directed everybody to lie, cheat, and steal to avoid all liability for depleted uranium. But there's also a composite one to all of Chem Bio.
Right. Doug, Keith Sohn, let's let him have a few minutes here, Doug, please.
Keith, you're here?
Yes, I am,
Oh,
Doug.
God bless you, Keith.
I heard you.
The floor is yours, Keith.
You have just a few minutes, Keith, to give your impressions.
Okay. Denise there?
Yes, I'm listening.
Yeah, Keith, you have to speak up real fast. We've only got about 6 minutes.
Okay, yes. I was at the RAC. It was very interesting, very eye-opening. What the Secretary of VH, Shinseki, is doing is very criminal. What he is actually doing, he being a vet, is also selling his fellow vet down the road. As we know, we've gone through this with Agent Orange. We're going through it with Gulf War. And the returning troops will be going through it also. They do need to fix the system desperately and rely on the research that the RAC so desperately is asking for. After all, these are the leaders in their fields, and whoever doesn't listen to it, it's beyond me.
Anything else, Keith, that you'd like to add?
Keith, you got anything you want to say, Keith, that's wide open for you? I mean, you've been leading and helping us for a long time.
You know, it just boils down to the VA doesn't have the best interest of the veteran, period. It's the culture of the VA desperately needs to be changed. The figures on the employment rates of the veteran within VA, they're so low it's pathetic. If we could change the mindset of VA by getting some veterans in there, and I'm not talking down at the wage earner salaries, but at the mid-management up to the upper management, things may change. But until then, we're stuck with what we got, and what we have is something on the end of a stick, I'd say.
I think what's key here is when any veteran goes to the VA, They should be provided all of the documents. The example, hey, I was there, I was hit at the burn pits. We have the documents confirming the health effects. The VA should provide that to the veteran and then set up all the medical care. Same thing with depleted uranium. Same thing with the pesticides.
Correct.
But it doesn't happen. When you go to the VA, they hide the reports, hide the documents from the vet, and then they hide those documents from the practitioner providing us medical care.
Right. They even hide your in-service medical records within your C file. They're sent to the C file the minute you end your terminal service.
And I think
when
we
you ETS, it goes
on the
directly
problem.
To VA into a C file. Nobody can get it unless you request a C file. You don't even have your records. The new generation of soldier does. Those of us who left service between before 9/11 don't. Thereby, we have to go to the C file, get it, and take it to the PCP. It's within the VA system, but the VA system can't even get it to your primary care physician.
The PCP are not addressed.
There's disconnect in every LEPC and VA.
Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we're running out of time. The documents, reports will be posted on the Warrior Connection on the archives. Denise, can you ensure that we get that entire letter?
Yes.
Posted up with Gary Knoll?
I'll send you the scanned collection of it. And I want to say to all the Gulf War vets out there, please do not give up hope. We will overcome this one way or the other. And all this trickles down to you when you go into your VA doctor or primary care. They can't bust the higher ups. So we've got to correct this problem at headquarters before we can see real change. Thank you guys for allowing me to read the letter from the Gulf War vets that served on the committee. And our praise goes to them. Our wholehearted support goes to them. Plus to Anthony Hardy, Paul Sullivan, and the ones that have been involved since the get-go in trying to make this right. We give our thanks to and our thanks to our researchers and scientists that served on that committee.
Well, God bless everybody. Let's keep the fight up. The veterans are owed this. Mr. President, you got to take care of us. Mr. President Obama, please take care of us. Help us, sir. This is Doug Rocky, Denise, and Keith. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good evening. All I want you to do for me.